You're listening to episode 17 of season 13 of the New World Order. Hey everybody, this is Klaatu, and in this episode we're going to talk about community. And this is in direct response to an email from a friend of mine named Carl. I think I know Carl from Mastodon, I'm pretty sure. Sure is where I met him. So Carl says, I hope we're not spamming you too much email. Nope, you're not. For the past several years, I've used PyCore, an ARM port of TinyCore, for my Raspberry Pi projects. It's super light, runs in RAM, command line only by default, and can be unplugged without file system corruption, so sort of like an appliance, which is what I wanted. That's actually really useful. I mean, I've run Pis, this is Klaatu again, but I've run Pis with just like various versions of Fedora and so on, and it hasn't been a problem for me to just yank a power out when I'm finished with it, because I just haven't had a problem with that. I've found that the journaled file systems do their job. Nevertheless, I've always felt weird about it, and so it's kind of a neat point about just sort of running like a super tiny distribution, and I'm just running it in RAM and so on. That's really cool. So anyway, he says, development on it went strangely silent, and support for newer Pis has been stuck in beta last I looked, and the repos for the beta builds are sparse. That's curious, and that's too bad. But anyway, he says, I went looking for a replacement OS and found that the Pi builds of, I don't know if I want to say the name of this distribution, maybe I'll bleep it out, of Linux, were current. The project looked active, and the OS itself shared some of the same qualities as PyCore that I noted above. My initial testing went well, so I made the decision to invest some time with it. I wrote an installation guide for the Pi0W on the wiki and joined a couple of mailing lists. I followed their package build guide and successfully made packages I needed that weren't in the repos. I submitted the patch request for the package builds to the dev mailing list per their process. All was going well, except I'd asked a couple package build questions in the appropriate IRC chat room and received zero responses. Okay, no big deal. I sort of worked out the issues myself anyway. I submitted a patch, as I mentioned above, and again, have not received any response to date, positive or negative. Okay, no big deal, I guess. I'll just use my packages locally, though it would be nice to know if I followed the guidelines correctly. I also asked a question to one of the mailing lists and ended up replying to myself a couple of times, and again, just ended up sorting it out myself. I did at least have one reply in that instance, which was nice, but ultimately no help. The project forum was apparently shut down some time ago, too, in favor of IRC and mailing lists, though the link to the forum still exists on every page of the wiki in the sidebar. Then today, this email showed up in the mailing list. I don't know the history of anything he's talking about. It may just be one of those goodbye cruel world posts that happen in the life of a project as people come and go. But in context of my own rather lackluster response to attempts to engage in the community, it's got me wondering if there's something more serious going on. You've done a couple of episodes on evaluating software. Have you done one on evaluating the health of a project and judging what level of involvement to invest in? For myself, and I'm going to press on, but my initial enthusiasm has been tempered a little bit, which is sort of disappointing. And then he posts a post that was emailed to the mailing list of this project that he's talking about, which, I mean, you can Google this for yourself and figure out what project this is. I just don't want to say anything. I don't want this to serve as gossip, but this is an interesting email nevertheless. I mean, slightly, it's out of context. Well, we have no context, so we have no idea what's going on, but it's still worth reading. So hello, unfortunately, this is the email, not from Carl. This is someone else emailing the project that he's talking about. So, hello, unfortunately, it's become abundantly clear to me that this isn't the same project that I joined over a decade ago. Time and time again, I have been reminded of this as of late, and while I don't want to rehash old disagreements, I really can't do this anymore. Note that this constitutes an orphaning of all my packages, as well as some specific tools that I am sole maintainer of. I will be pushing a commit momentarily, to reflect this. While the interim project policy has done some good to help streamline common issues with the project, I feel that the policy proposals to replace the interim policy are flawed and serve as an effective reversal of the open governance goals I had in mind while drafting the interim policy. It's a lot of policies. I wish the rest of you all the best, but I can't keep doing this. And so effectively, I'm assuming that is the person's resignation letter from that project. I've read letters or emails similar to that to other projects. It's not an uncommon sentiment. This isn't the same project that I joined. I can't do this anymore. That sort of thing. It's a common thing, and I think it's important for people to be able to do that. Not important to be able to do it like they're not allowed to. I mean, it's important for people to allow themselves to do it. You have to get to that point sometimes. And sometimes the sooner you get to that point, the better, because then you waste fewer years of your life on something that is indeed, after all, a dead end. And I think that's kind of what Carl is asking about. Is there a way or is there a rule of thumb or some thing, some tip that we might come up with to help each other and ourselves to avoid, to sort of look at a project and maybe scope it out a little bit in advance and be critical of it when you're approaching it and decide, that's not a project that I should be getting involved in with, actually. And that was a really good question because, I mean, gosh, I've looked back at projects and just thought, yeah, that is not as shiny on the inside as their website would suggest. And I mean from a getting involved standpoint. It has happened a fair amount, actually. And maybe it happens more to some people and less to others. Maybe some people just aren't really the getting involved type, and maybe if they're not aware of that, then they try to get involved and then inevitably become disappointed. And it's not because of the project. It's just because they're not the type to join a party. They don't know how to do that and be comfortable in that situation. And so they walk away disappointed, thinking maybe that it's the fault of the group, whereas when in reality it isn't necessarily the group's fault. It's nobody's fault. It's just that you're not that type of person. So I mean, that's, and by you, of course, I mean me. So who knows? I mean, you know, there are lots of different theories on how things, on how human relationships work, right? And each of us has a different, I shouldn't say theory, I should say there are just different dynamics. And that's a lot to bring to something, because you're bringing all of your expectations or your hopes or your desires. Like, I want this project to be this for me. And then if that project isn't that for you, then maybe it sort of disappoints you and you walk away unhappy. But allowing for that, allowing for different dynamics and different personality types and all those other things that people who know psychology and sociology and stuff probably understand really, really well, and I have no clue about, other than like the hints and clues that I've been able to piece together over my life. I was thinking about this question of, well, is there a way to analyze a project in advance and kind of get an educated guess, at the very least, on how it's doing? I wasn't able to come up with a troubleshooting flowchart sort of thing where you could figure out in advance what's working and what's not working with a given project. I mean, I guess the answer would be, well, check out their mailing lists and see what kind of activity is there and that sort of thing. But I feel like that's kind of the obvious answer and a little bit, I don't know, almost too direct. Maybe I kind of get a feeling that Carl's asking for a little bit more than that. So, and certainly I feel like the puzzle demands a little bit more than that. So here's my first pass, and that is that I've come up with six profiles of a project and its community that may ring true, may not ring true. It just kind of depends on your experience. But these are things that I have seen, and I'm just kind of wondering, maybe this would be a way to look at a project and judge where it's at. So the first one is actually probably, for me, I think possibly the most common situation, but I think a lot of these are going to be dependent on personality types. But the first one that I could think of was that there is a vibrant community. It's obvious that things are happening within this project, and there's no greeter, which means to me that for whatever reason, there are people who are familiar with one another. Maybe it's because they've been working on the code together for so long, and they just kind of know each other, know a lot about each other, whether they like it or not, whether they care or not. Or maybe they've assembled and to maybe they've assembled a team and they're embarking on this exciting journey together because they want to conquer the world. Either way, they've formed sort of an inner circle accidentally, and they've forgotten to place someone, the host or a hostess, at the door to greet newcomers. And I think there are certain personality types who can go to that door with or without a host or hostess, barge in, make an impression, deliver some brilliant patch or some brilliant idea or design modification or whatever, and make an impression and integrate themselves into that inner circle. But I think there are probably for that one person, there are probably three other geeks out there who have a lot to offer and simply can't, they just simply don't know what to do when they get to the front door. They arrive, maybe they do deliver a patch. Maybe they have some housewarming type gift that they bring to the project. And maybe it's accepted, maybe it's integrated. But because there's not really anyone to invite them in to do more, then that's the extent of their involvement. And I think, if we think really coldly and corporately about this, that is kind of that's earning a customer, but letting the, what do they call it in corp speak, there's a buzzword for this. The promoter, is it the promoter? Is that what they call them? The promoter, where they, they go into the store and they purchase the thing, and then if you've done your corporate wage slave job correctly, they leave feeling like they've just joined a family because they've purchased this item. And so they go and tell all of their friends to go back to that same store and purchase the same item or something similar. And that's the idea, that you gain these net promoters who go out and talk you up, that they are advertisers for you now. So now if we get off of our corporate pulpit for a moment and get back to just being normal people, we could say, well, that sort of applies to a software project or any kind of project, right? If you want to grow, and by grow, I simply mean if you want to be healthy, you don't necessarily have to expand and grow and take over neighboring empires, but you do want to make sure that as people phase out of your project, more people are phasing in. That's just kind of the cycle, right? The life cycle of a project. People get busy with real life. They get busy with this. They get jobs. They do whatever. They leave, but luckily you've got fresh people, fresh meat, new blood, whatever you call it, coming into the project, feeding into that. So your project always has that supply of people who have time and dedication and blood, sweat, and tears that they can dedicate to the project. And if you want that, then you have to make sure that people are coming into your project space, and that they're feeling welcome, and that they know where to go with their their new idea, or their patch, better yet, the thing that they brought with them to offer. And I'm not saying at all, I'm basing all of this on the assumption that the people who come to your door are coming to the door bearing the appropriate credentials. And I understand that there are certain hurdles that you want to put into place, because believe me, I've been involved with enough project on the management side, not that I've ever wanted to be, but you know, someone's got to do it sometimes. So you're there, and you see people approach, and they say, "Hey, I'm here. I've got all these great ideas. Why don't you all just sit down and listen to me, and then I'll give you the idea, and then you can all go and work on it." And it's just like, well, first of all, we don't even know your first name yet, and then second of all, you're not the boss of us. So there are those people who come in and they don't understand the dynamic. So I'm assuming that we're talking about a person who has done their homework. They know what the project's about. They've got something to bring to it. Like Carl said, he had these packages that he had built, and he came to the community and said, "Hey, here's these packages that I have built. Why don't you review them and possibly include them in your repository or whatever?" And that didn't happen. So there was no greeter. There was nobody there to accept the bounty that Carl, in this example, was bringing to the project. And therefore, Carl, well, he says he'll press on, but I don't feel like Carl's going to be a net promoter of this project. And quite possibly Carl will not last on the project. I don't know. Carl probably doesn't even know. But, I mean, the point is that his experience has been tempered and hampered by the lack of response. So, and for all we know, there is a community somewhere in there making all these exciting things happen, but nobody was manning the front door. Okay, so another possibility, another profile that I've experienced in the past is the lights are on but nobody's home syndrome, which you may have also experienced in the past. This is usually a pretty easy one to diagnose. You look at their release schedule, you look at the last time that they actually touched the code or whatever, and you realize that, yeah, there's not a whole lot actually happening here. The problem is with that, there are these false positives out there. I mean, heck, I'm one of those false positives myself. There are projects that I have online that I do not touch for 3 years, and you might think, well, this project's dead, but actually it just doesn't need to be modified for 3 years. It's not that it's dead, it's just that it's working, and there's no use, there's no point in messing with it right now. So you do have those projects out there, and there are bigger ones than mine, certainly, that just don't have a lot of regular activity because they don't need it. But unfortunately, those projects trick you, because then you go to something that really ought to have more activity, and you think, well, this seems like a dead project to me because the code hasn't been updated in a year, but I don't know, maybe that's okay. Maybe they're just working on other stuff right now, because their site sure looks exciting and they're still posting on their social media stuff, and you know, so there are signs of life, and yet for whatever reason the work just isn't actually getting done. And that does happen, and I think the way that happens is that some people are very good at promoting. That's what they do. They are marketing people. They like to do it. They do it well. And if they join a project at some point and they stick with that project, they will continue to promote and continue to market and continue to drive a project from a marketing standpoint, even though the people who are supposed to be producing the code part of a project have long ago sort of checked out. Maybe they haven't actually left, but they've just kind of lost the plot. And maybe there's no project manager or project manager-like person to drive anything, and so maybe the coders are producing code. Maybe stuff is getting updated, but those releases aren't happening, and that's because they don't know when it counts as a release. There's no roadmap and so on. So it happens. It occurs out there that there are lights on and no one home, or basically no one home in a project. And you can walk up to such a project and you can excitedly submit code, and maybe they'll integrate it, maybe they won't. You'll never really understand what happened because it's really just a toss of the dice as to whether someone notices that you walked in at all. All right, so that was zero and one. So this is the second one, right? So the second case that I've seen is the exclusive club, and this is a tricky one. So it's an open source project that has people involved, but for whatever reason they forgot to tell people on the outside that they're actually throwing a private party. And this can manifest in a couple of different ways. So, I mean, first of all, it might just be that they're just not interested, that they're perfectly happy with their tight-knit group. They have formed an inner circle. Maybe it's intentional, or maybe it's basically intentional. And the difference there is that maybe they've actually said, "We are the people who know the most. We are the best coders for this project. We will continue to do all of the work ourselves, and we will actively turn away anyone who tries to get in because we are the best." That happens, I'm sure. I have not. I don't know how to see that. I don't know. I'm not sure how to react to that, or even if I know how to recognize it when I see it sometimes. So it happens. I think another way that it happens, though, and I guess the default assumption for me, the benefit of a doubt assumption, is that sometimes it happens, it sneaks up on people, right? They form that inner circle because, well, they are the three people who know the code best. And it's really, really, it takes a lot of work to integrate someone into this because you have to kind of get people up to speed and explain why we don't use that particular function, and really it's much better to use this one, and so on. And that's just a lot of work. So what happens is you just they end up forming an inner circle, and they end up not inviting anyone into that inner circle because it's just too much work to get anyone else involved. And besides, what could possibly go wrong? It's not like they're going to ever die themselves, right? Or get busy with something. So why would we need anyone but these three people, or whatever? Other times, I think that it's even less conscious than that, and that is that, well, for instance, possibly a project has four people in a room. You think I'm making up these numbers, but I'm actually imagining very specific scenarios. So there's four people in the room. They work at they physically work in an office together. They are literally in the same room Monday through Friday, 9 to 7, 8, 9, whatever, and they're working on this project that happens to publish all the code to the internet. Why would anyone do that? Well, a lot of times it happens because that code that they're working on is GPL. They have to publish it on the internet. Other times it's just because they decided, well, this should be GPL. This is something that we believe in. We're going to publish it. That said, we're not interested, actually, in inviting other people in. If someone wants to fork it, they can, I guess, but this is our thing because this is what we need for this particular job. It's essentially in-house software that happens to be published publicly. It does happen. It sounds strange, but it actually happens quite often, especially in the movie business. So sometimes that's a private party just kind of based around the fact that there's no reason for it to be a non-private party. They're co-workers. They can talk to each other. And if you're not there in that room with them, then you're not really a part of that project. If you submit a patch, they might get to it because it's useful to them. But as far as they understand, as far as they feel, and as far as they can have a capacity to care about, they're the only people on that project. And they're only on the project because they're getting paid to work on it. And that's what their boss tells them to work on when they come in to work on Monday every week. They are told to fix this bug or to add this feature. So that totally happens. And frankly, with the project, the particular project that Carl is talking about, I feel like this might actually be possibly part of it. From what little I know of that project that he's talking about, it is a, I believe, a fairly corporately sponsored project. And so I'm wondering, Carl, if you are experiencing some of that, especially since they closed down the forum. And the forum being on the wiki means nothing, because wikis are useless. There, I said it, wikis are useless. Without someone maintaining a wiki day and night, wikis are useless. They bit rot faster than anything else out there. So this might be a case of there's a project and it's being published publicly because it's GPL code, and they'll take patches to the core set of libraries or whatever, but they're not really that interested in the whole community activity of, oh, here's my package and I'm maintaining it and I've got this project in my workshop. They don't care about that. They go to work, they're told that they're on this project, and that's what they do all day. So I'm just theorizing here, but I kind of wonder. Okay, so what am I on now? 0, 1, 2. This must be 3. So the third profile I came up with was that a project is decaying slowly and coming apart at the seams. I've seen this happen. You've seen this happen. Sometimes a project seems to be doing okay, and it might seem to be doing okay for a whole year. But if you really, really look inside, you see that everything's just, the nuts are coming loose, the screws are all shaking free, parts are flying all over the place, it's coming apart. And it's got a lot of motion, and so it's gonna keep spinning for a long time, but eventually there will be nothing left, because everything will have just flown off. And I've definitely seen that happen, where you think a project is fine, everything's fine. They keep insisting that they're fine. I mean, heck, companies do this. I mean, I've known people who've been at, I mean, startups are kind of, I think, I feel like they're kind of infamous for it. Startups, they're doing fine. Oh my gosh, we're out of money, you're all fired. Like, today, like, go home now. And we can't pay you for the last week. I mean, I've known people where that's happened. So if a company with money can do that, then surely an open source little hobby project can do that, right? It happens. Number 4. Some projects are just unpleasant. Sometimes it's difficult to tell, because you see someone on a mailing list and it does seem like they're being pretty mean, but then again, the person who they're talking to was pretty irrational as well, so I'm not really sure who exactly is the bad guy here. And you can look through mailing lists for, you know, a week and not get through, really, you'll get nowhere, because every post, of course, every thread is going to turn into noise eventually. So it's really difficult, I think, to get a feel for that. And once again, there are a lot of false positives out there. You know, you can look at one project and see someone reacting very, very apparently poorly on a mailing list. And lots of other people on the mailing list say, you're reacting poorly to this. But then you look at the thing that set them off, and you look at that history, and you think, oh my gosh, yeah, that was actually spot on. This person was totally right. And yeah, people might not have liked their attitude in the situation, but I know what they're reacting to. That's happened to me several times, and I haven't been the one reacting, but I've been the one looking at a mailing list and thinking, that person was correct, because I know this person who emailed the list out of the blue, making wild claims about this or that. I've seen that person mail other mailing lists, you know, or I've listened to their podcast, and I've heard what things they stir up and try to get a reaction out of people and try to create drama from this or that. So you get those false positives where a perfectly respectable person seems to have gone off the handle at this poor innocent journalist or whatever. until you kind of look at the history and you realize, no, actually, that was this respected person, though they flew off the handle, they were calling it exactly as it should be. But then you have the actual positive, like not the false positive, the real times where this person has flown off the handle and they're completely wrong, and they should really just they should admit that they're wrong and they should apologize and so on. So it's really difficult, I think, to be an outsider and look in at this sort of thing, but it happens. There are projects filled with people, or just with one person, that you just don't want to be around. You don't want to deal with them. You don't want to have to deal with their attitude or the way that they act towards you or the things that they say. And that's tough too, because you have something to offer maybe, and you don't want to walk away from this project because it's the biggest one in town that serves your need, and so you want to continue to sort of be a part of it. I've been near or around situations like that, although not me as either the target or the aggressor. Hopefully I've been neither of those two things, but I've been around cases where it has happened, and I've seen it from certainly the target, the victim's side, and thought, wow, this is really not cool. This is very, very bad. I mean, luckily it hasn't ever happened in a project that I've been a part of, but I've stood next to a target and said, they're really not treating you very well. You should walk away from this. So that's something to look out for. But like I say, like everything else, it seems to be really difficult to diagnose before it happens. And then finally, the fifth one is that there is no community. But the good news is that there doesn't need to be a community. Nobody's asking for a community. So sometimes you go up to a project and you have something to offer and you throw it on the table, and maybe they accept it, maybe they don't. The thing is that there is no project, maybe. I mean, there's a project. Someone's producing something and it's a downloadable thing that you can use, but there's no sense of, I guess, ownership. There's no sense of ownership to that project. There's no sense of ownership to a community of people based around that project. It's just simply, it is sort of a cold and emotionless production of a very, very useful thing. I've been a part of a couple of different projects like this, and frankly, I really like it. This is the one that I enjoy the most, strangely. I mean, it is logical, it is effective and efficient. What more do you need? To be honest, I said I wouldn't name names, but to be honest, Slackware is a little bit like that. And I say that really, really affectionately. Slackware doesn't really have, at least that I'm aware of, a real community sense. We don't have a community manager, you know. We don't have meetups or anything like that that I'm aware of. I mean, maybe it did at one point. I really don't know the history of Slackware beyond 12.0 or so, and even then, that was just me running Slackware. So I didn't meet other Slackware users until I think Southeast Linux Fest. And I guess you could call that a community. There were five or six people there who sat at a table together. I didn't sit with them because I didn't know I was invited and I didn't want to intrude. And later they made it clear that actually they would have been happy to have me sit at the table with them. So I guess that's a little bit of a community, but I don't get the feel that they sort of hang out on a regular basis. And certainly I've run across other Slackware users at other conferences, and we chat a little bit, but I don't really get the sense that, yeah, there's a Slackware community. I guess the closest thing to that would be the slackbuilds.org community, but again, there's not the word community is almost wrong. It's really more like a team of, or a group of people who happen to all maintain packages. And that's more or less the extent of our interactions. Or at least, I mean, I'm obviously speaking everything from my point of view. So if someone else is involved with that stuff and has a completely different picture of it, then that's okay. Then maybe there is stuff happening that I'm not aware of. But from my perspective and my level of involvement, it is very methodical, programmatic. I feel like it's very efficient, and there's no excess baggage there. You don't get involved with people, you don't feel for them, you don't care about them. It's just, we're all just contributing to a project that serves each of our needs perfectly. And that's very refreshing. There have been other projects too. Sakura is just one example. Flowblade was a little bit like that. Flowblade, the video editor. I've submitted a patch to them. It got heavily modified and integrated into the project, and that was kind of neat. But I never really got a feel that I was submitting to a group of people. I definitely got a sense that I was submitting to the sole maintainer of the project. And I don't believe I ever got like a thanks or anything for the patch. There was never any kind of acknowledgement, really. It was very much like a business transaction. You go to the window, you put down the code, they take the code, they give you a receipt, I guess, you walk away. I mean, that's it. It is very, like I said, I keep saying, it's efficient. And to me, that's very appealing, especially in the computer world where I don't need to have a community around any of this stuff, really. Again, I like to know that a project is healthy. I want to know that there are new people coming in and that there are people ready to take the code base on should anything happen to the current maintainer, that sort of thing. But in terms of feeling like a member of a club, not really interested in that so much. So anyway, those are the five profiles of communities that I was able to come up with. And yeah, unfortunately, I have no clue how to diagnose them for health, how to analyze them to see if that's something that you want to be involved with, or whether it's just a really bad idea and you should turn around and run away as quickly as possible. I don't know how to do that very well yet, or I haven't been able to codify it anyway. And to make matters more complex is that there are variations on all of those five profiles that I drummed up. There are variations of that you'll come across in reality as well, and that's always interesting because now you have this weird mix of their website keeps telling you to get involved, and it has buttons on how to get involved, but then when you try to get involved, it seems that no one else is around. No one's here to take the thing that they assigned to you. There's no one to turn in the homework assignment to now that you are apparently supposedly involved. Yeah, so there are lots of different variations on this. And so far, the only way that I've really been able to tell, to find these profiles is to get involved with a project and then walk away from it later. Not necessarily walk away, but emerge from the experience more knowledgeable about the nature of that project. And that's not a very efficient way to determine whether you want to get involved with a project, because obviously, in order to learn this, you have to get involved. So, I don't know. I'd love to hear other people's feelings on this, other people's thoughts about it, really, not necessarily your feelings. But yeah, I would like to hear if anyone else has been able to crack this code and figure out a good way to analyze a project from afar, determine whether or not it is indeed a healthy project to get involved with an emphasis on reliability. Because I can make judgment calls from afar easy. That's easy. Making accurate and realistic and fair judgment calls such that I feel secure that yes, I have made the correct choice, that I'm going to walk away from this before getting involved. Or yes, I've made the right choice, I am going to get involved. Like, how do you tell? Or are we just asking too much? Is this sort of the question of if you never fall in love, you'll never break up, or whatever the saying is. So maybe it's just not maybe it's not something that's possible. But I don't know. I feel like a diagnosis at least should be something within some kind of reach. Let me know what you think about that, dear listener. And for now, I think that's about it for this episode. Thanks for listening. I will talk to you next week. That's how this works every week with a new show. See you then. you for listening to the GNU World Order podcast. This has been Klaatu. You can reach me on IRC. I'm on the Freenode network, usually in channels such as Augcast Planet, Slacker Media, Slackware, a couple of others. My nick on IRC is not Klaatu. You can also reach me lately on Mastodon. My username there is @Klaatu@mastodon.xyz. Of course, you can email me at Klaatu@member.fsf.org. That's Klaatu@member.fsf.org. And of course, you can visit my various websites, GNUWorldOrder.info and SlackerMedia.info. I will see you next time.
Tonight, allow the spirits of love come to you.